Hope you remembered Flag Day. And also, happy birthday to JoJo Shuddy McGregor in Detroit. Normally, I don't do birthdays. JoJo was married to my late friend Byron McGregor, who was a giant newscaster at CKLW in Windsor, Canada, where this broadcast is being carried right now. And Byron McGregor was the one who did the Gordon Sinclair version of The Americans, which we'll play at a later time. Again, but happy birthday, JoJo. Hope you are well. Back in a moment with our three guests as we talk about the Bilderberg Group on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Marge, you said earlier that globalism isn't all that bad. It's the secrecy behind it, and it's what they're trying to do. How could we make globalism good? Is there any other way?
Well, yes. As Alex mentioned, there were some pretty smart fellows some time back that figured out a way to make democracy really work, and that is by dividing up government powers and having the power rest with the people and flow upwards to the three-tiered government that was set in place with the U.S. Constitution. We have to, you know, the thing now is to think globally, act locally, and there's a lot of truth in that. There are, in fact, some cities in the United States, even some states that have either passed legislation or are considering legislation to even withdraw from the union if they try to declare martial law, or if some of these globalist plans are put into effect.
Arizona, Vermont, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, those are not the most populous states. The thing we have to do is work locally. We have to elect local politicians, congressmen, and go for the guy that doesn't have any money. Go for the guy who will actually represent you and is not bought and paid for by these giant corporations.
Well, that's right. George, you mentioned solutions at the end of the last hour, and I want to hear Estelon and Jim's. But one big one is we get about a 60% national turnout for presidential elections. For off-year elections, we get about a 40%. And for local elections nationally, we get about an 8% turnout. The real power is at the county, city, and state level. And the Bilderberg Group, through their intermediaries, the National Association of Counties, of Governors, of City Managers, the globalists write the policy. It's the same laws being passed in Germany, that are passed in England, that are passed in Canada, that are passed in the U.S., that are passed in Mexico. It's all unified. They write up, you know, basically blueprints that are implemented. Their lobbyists come in, fly your city manager to New York, give them a bunch of money, they then implement. If we, the people, start watching at the county and city level, if we start running for school board and running for city manager or running for county commissioner, city council, they cannot get away with this. So if the people just simply get informed, as Estelon said, and I know what he was alluding to because I interviewed him for a documentary, you know, several hours off and on up in Ottawa. We ought to talk some about what happened.
Yeah, we will.
You know, what actually happened in Ottawa. But to make a long story short here, he's right. They have national studies every year where two-thirds of people can't find Iraq on a map. Most high school seniors can't tell you two of the first, you know, 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. People don't know the basics of our society now, and so with this ignorance is coming slavery. When I was talking to Jim Tucker, one of the folks that's been covering this the longest there, he also brought up the dumbing down. They had a big study a few years ago where they looked at the test scores of high school juniors in the 50s, and they compared those scores in reading, writing, mathematics, in geography, and they were many times more informed and you know, having the facts than college juniors. So, and when you read Bilderberg Group documents, that is their minions that implement these policies, the think tanks, the CFR, others, they openly say, they said 100 years ago, we've got to dumb the American people down. They're the richest, they're the smartest, they're the most informed. We've gone from 4% of the world, the U.S., having half the wealth, to 4% only having about 30% now. We're being robbed. With our ignorance comes slavery.
Absolutely.
Daniel, let me ask you this, and then the other two, Jim and Alex, jump in.
Would you terribly mind if I just went back before the commercial break? Alex was talking about a couple of very interesting things that I'd like to put a closure on, if I may.
All right, go ahead, and then I'll ask you a question.
Thank you very much. I think people believe, as I said before, concrete evidence. So my fear is that to a layman, all this sounds like Disneyland. And I think to fight effectively against these people, the Bilderbergers, I think it is very, very important to get ordinary people on board. Now, during the commercial break, I got out of my files a copy of a document, which is a, again, people believe, documented evidence. And it's an 18-page French military intelligence report dated July 1941, which is summarizing a 100-page dossier on the French Syndicus Group, which is, again, basically a Bilderberg group. And this is what the quote says from the report. And, again, it's a French military intelligence report from July 1941, that this movement's aim is essentially to overthrow in every country where they exist the parliamentary regimes which are considered insufficiently devoted to the interests of these groups and therefore too difficult to control because of the number of persons required to control them. And again, this is an 18-page French military intelligence report. There is no denying the evidence. I mean, we can talk about that the Bilderbergers run the drug trade, and they run this, and they run that, and they're into genocidal. But again, unless we can prove it to the layman that these people actually exist and there's a foundation to all this stuff, we're going to lose all these good people out there who would like to believe it, but who are having a very difficult time simply because it's such an extraordinary, extraordinary thing. And just one more thing. Alex was talking about the banker's rule. And this is a very important thing. Again, very, very simple to explain to a layman. Current parliamentary democracy works on the basis of an elected head of state, a parliament, which can be dumped anytime you decide to orchestrate a crisis, and a third branch of government in charge of its financial system called an independent central banking system. Now, in the United States, and I know Jim and Alex, you guys both have talked about this in your book and on your show. This independent banking system is known as Federal Reserve, which is not an independent banking, but a privately owned bank.
Right.
In Europe, following the Syndicus design tradition, the independent banking system is run through either European Central Bank, whose monetary policies are put together by the leading Syndicists and members of the Bilderberg elite, such as Jean-Claude Trichet, who is a member of the Bilderberg Group. And in Britain, this independent system is run by the Bank of England, which is a premier Syndicist institution. Now, the independent central banking system controls the emission of currency, it controls national credit, and it controls the interest rates. And at any time the government displeases it, it uses its power to orchestrate the overthrow of the government. And again, as a very, very concrete example, Margaret Thatcher. Now, Jim Tucker has talked about this in his book. He's done interviews, and he talked about how Margaret Thatcher was overthrown because she refused, and again, I quote Margaret Thatcher, to allow a group of unelected bankers to run her country. And that is all the work of the
Senate. And they beat her, didn't they? They got her out.
Exactly. And this kind of stuff, I think people can understand, and they can start putting it together. And then we get all these people on board. We can start talking about the drugs. We can start talking about the microchips and the transponders, because we have all these people are listening. But until we get to that point, we're going to have a lot of people looking at us and saying, these guys are just nuts.
Do they assassinate as well?
Yes, they do. I mean, clearly they killed John F. Kennedy. Clearly, the very same crew killed Lincoln. Again, Daniel and Mr. Mars are right. The Bilderberg Group is just when they got publicly discovered by some newspapers, and so that's the name they were given, as Shakespeare says, as you like it, in the words of Jim Tucker. But Margaret Thatcher, on the record, did say that it was an honor to be denounced by Bilderberg, and she did give the quote to the fact that a private group of bankers wanted to take over England. And what Daniel said earlier is absolutely key. Regardless of what you think of global government, these are the individuals that introduced it to us. This is the group that has been pushing it. They're the architects. They're in control right now. And they hate parliaments. They hate congresses. They hate having to buy off hundreds of people, and they admit they can't control them. So they attempt to control the monetary system. They attempt to centralize power in the hands of the executive. They attempt to create unelected governing councils and regional boards. This is what they're doing. Right now, the roads of the state I live in Texas are controlled by an unelected board that openly is being taken over by the Spanish company Sentra, being given 80% of Texas roads, 80+%. So you know, my whole point is, respectfully to Daniel, I think people are ready for the truth. I mean, sure, 5 years ago, you talk about a world government plan to have an American union, people laugh at you. Or you talk about a world government plan for forced microchipping, people laugh at you. But now they've heard the Mexican Attorney General try to make his employees all take it. They've heard Latin American leaders say it. They've seen it all over the news. They've seen national talk show hosts call for it. So, you know, I mean, in my view, I think just laying it all out there is the way to go. I found that that is just as effective. You know, that's just my opinion.
Can they, Jim Mars, the Bilderbergers, can they set policies of government? Do they have that kind of clout?
Well, again, you have to simply go back and look at a few things. For example, in 1991, Bill Clinton attends the Bilderberg meeting in Germany, and the next year he's nominated president and gets to be president of the United States. Tony Blair, same thing. Attends a Bilderberg meeting in Greece in 1993, and the next year he becomes the party leader, and then in 97 becomes prime minister. There's other examples I gave in my book, Rule by Secrecy. One of the words that leaked out from one Bilderberg meeting was that we needed to reestablish diplomatic relations with China, and within the year, Richard Nixon had gone to China and opened diplomatic relations.
Exactly. So, here's another example. This year, we know that Governor Pataki, who is talking about running for president, was there. We've now confirmed that Hillary Clinton was there. You have both these individuals there courting the Bilderberg group, trying to be vetted by them.
Yeah.
They brag that they certify presidential candidates. Last year, Governor Warner, who's a big sweetheart for the Democratic nomination, he went there. So time and time again, yes, we know that... This is what I'm trying to say. The Bilderberg Group is a very powerful subset, very near the top of the pyramid. Some of the individuals are the top of the pyramid. David Rockefeller, the Rothschilds, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, you know, who owns oil companies, shipping firms, you name it.
What, is there an unnamed group at the top of the pyramid, Alex?
Yes. We know that as the White Brotherhood is what they call themselves. Then you get off into the Illuminati and the occultic ramifications, and we cover all this in my film, The Order of Death. My newest film, The Order of Death, details all of this, and people can find out more at Infowars.com. In fact, let me just bring that up to Daniel Estolan or Jim Mars. Daniel, I understand. I've talked to you. I've interviewed you many times. I've met you in person. I know you know about all the other facets. I know you understand it's hard for folks to believe, but I'd like to get your take, because I didn't believe this 10, 12 years ago, but every time I research it, it's just the facts. Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, in his own autobiography, Men in Powers, wrote that the Bilderberg Group is the head group. The CFR and Trilateral Commission carry out policy. He wrote this. I didn't write this. This is published. And then he went on to say he loves the satanic rituals they do at Bohemian Grove. I mean, should we just not cover what Helmut Schmidt said?
I'm not exactly sure I understand the question.
Well, no, what I'm saying to you is, you know, you've been talking about people having trouble believing all this. I've never asked you, what is your view on all the weird occultic activity? Because George Norrie brought up, you know, who's at the top of this. And so I was simply bringing up that there is an occultic spiritual network above this. I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, needless to say, I mean, Bilderberg, although there are 125 every year, out of which some 60, 65, 70 are your regular attendees, members of the steering committee, etc. And so if you multiply and extrapolate it and over the years, of course, you have a certain percentage of people who are into the occult. Of course, you're going to have another percentage of people who are into pedophilia. You're going to have another percentage of people who are into all kinds of weird, strangest rituals. But I think as a whole, Bilderberg is a globalist organization whose idea, again, is to overthrow in every country.
What do you think the net worth might be, Daniel? What do you think the net worth, the income stream of each individual might be? I mean, are these people all multi-billionaires, multi-millionaires? How much money do they have?
Well, I think it depends. If you take the amount of money they have in the bank, that'll be one amount. And if you take the money is hidden and the money they earn from drug trade. And we can talk a little bit later on about how these people run the drug trade.
$300 trillion is the number that a lot of top economists, mainstream people, have come up with. And Daniel's right. Most of their money is hidden. Bill Gates is nothing with $46 billion. The admitted assets of the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas, the British royalty, is well over $80 trillion. Rothschild money is well over $100 trillion. I mean, this has even been in mainstream Russian newspapers. And remember,
$100 trillion. How much more do they need, Alex?
Well, it's not about money. It's about control. They are control freaks.
Exactly. I was about to say, it is not... These individuals will tell you it's not how much money they have in the bank; it's what they control. It's like a university president. He doesn't own the $24 billion extra, you know, dollars that say UT has, but he doesn't own that. But he's in control of it. It's like a ship's captain doesn't own the 100-ton ship, but he's steering it. He's in control of it. And yes, these people have an innate, inbred. Daniel said something that was so key. He's a genius when it comes to really analyzing this. And that's that it's an inbred, innate thing. I mean, David Rockefeller, at the pinnacle of this power, David Rockefeller literally works 18 hours a day. And the guy's almost 90 years old.
Well, that's probably what's keeping him alive, Alex.
Well, exactly. But these guys are dedicated. They are, and they want to control their environment. They want to dominate. They enjoy it. Daniel?
Well, they've been at it for such a long time, and they've permeated every level of society.
Have you met these people, Daniel? Have you met these people personally?
I've met some of them. I always have a lot of fun with David Rockefeller.
I mean, are they nice people?
Well, some of them are. For example, Dermot Gleeson, who is the president of AIB Group and chairman in Ireland. He's the funniest guy in the world. And last year in Rotherhagen in Germany, he and I, as I was the only person there covering the car, well, Jim was there too, but I was the only person taking photographs.
Well, what do these people tell you? They know about your research. They know about your book. They know what you think of the Bilderberg.
Well, some of them,
what do they say? Do they laugh about it?
Some of them just don't give a hoot. Others do care. And, for example, Gleason, I said to him, "Sir, you're looking very well today." "Thank you, thank you. You're looking very well too. I see you're here again." "Yes, sir, I'm here again." We went on for a while, and I said to him, "Would you mind if I took a picture of you?" He said, "Well, I think you better take a picture of you from the left side, because that's my better side." "All right, sir. Now, would you terribly mind telling all your other friends, if they just stood here for a group photograph, I'd go home?" And he just, you know, knee-slapping, started laughing, and went away.
Alex, let me ask you this. You said you had a mole there inside the Bilderberg group. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you for his name or her name, but what does the mole tell you?
Jim Tucker's been covering it for 30 years. He's got actual Bilderberg Group members. Estalon's been covering it for 14, 15. He's got actual members. What I have was hotel staff, and then another fellow named Scott got in. He got the documents. He got information. He was checked in the day before. He made phone calls. He got information. He found out information. And I have talked to individuals who are Bilderberg Group level in the past, separate from Bilderberg Group. I've talked to Skull and Bones members. I've talked to Bohemian Grove members. And again, the elite of Bohemian Grove or the elite of Skull and Bones, the elite of the CFR, this is a hierarchical system. And
what would they do with one of their members if they caught him talking to you or anybody else?
They have mafia rules. And obviously, they wouldn't be invited back, and if they release too much information, they might end up having a canoeing accident like a former CIA director had. And
goodbye, Mr. Colby.
Yes, goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Colby. But the good news is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but talking to you and Jim, there are a few Bilderberg Group members who are actually upset over the agenda, and for the first time in history, we see a major split on the Iraq war and on the Iran invasion. Jim, do you have any comments?
Yeah, well, I see the same thing. And there is obviously a schism. I also agree with you that they seem to be running scared. And, George, I think this fits into what you're talking about the upcoming geophysical changes.
Yes.
That is going to take place. And it's almost as though they're on a deadline. They've got to hurry up and get control over the planet before all of this stuff starts happening. What I'd like to throw in the mix, though, right now is the fact that for the people that are listening, don't think that this is just something that suddenly cropped up or that we're suddenly paying attention to. This is the outgrowth of plans that were laid down 100, maybe even hundreds of years ago. Thomas Jefferson, who's still in my hero column, once wrote that if we ever allow bankers to gain control over our money supply, our ancestors will wake up without property in the country we founded.
He saw that. Stay with us. We'll be back with all three of you in a moment as this continues on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls about the Bilderbergs and the Illuminati. We'll get your take on it with our guests right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and let's go back to the guests, of course, Jim Mars, Alex Jones, Daniel Eschelin. Daniel, let me ask you, you mentioned the drug cartel, the drug involvement of the Bilderbergs. Explain that for us, would you please?
I think anyone who, I have a lot of sources in the Secret Service, in the CIA, and the NSA, MI6, MI5 in Britain, people in the KGB. And all of them, you can, again, these facts are very easily, can be very easily confirmed. Drug trade is an international trade that earns someone in tax-free profits over $700 billion a year. Now, a lot of people believe that the drug trade is controlled by some junkie in New York or some mafioso in Colombia. It's actually not the case. $700 billion, that's a lot of money to wash, to clean, to invest, to hide. If that money appears in any one market, that could destroy the entire world economy. So in order to be able to move that money and use that money to influence the markets, you have to be absolutely the best and most brilliant person in the world. And the Bilderbergers and their forerunners, which are the Council of 300, the British East Indian Company, who are the people responsible for the drug trade in China, the opium trade, these people have been doing it for 350 years, and as a friend of mine in the Secret Service said to me, when something works as well as it does, why change it? Which is one of the reasons that the strategies and the tactics and the techniques these people have been using for as long as they have is always the same. It doesn't ever change.
Isn't it true that now in Afghanistan, the opium production is more than it was before we went in there?
It's six times what it was, according to the BBC. And if I can just second what Daniel was just saying, it's more than $700 billion a year. It's over $300 billion a year just in the U.S. market now.
That we know of.
That we know of. And
that was even reported in U.S. News and World Report. You know, the Taliban in 2000 almost destroyed 90% of the opium crop, and that could be the reason why we had to rush into Afghanistan.
Well, going back to the Dutch East India and then the British East India Company when they merged, this is mainstream history books. About 80 years ago, they began, 90 years ago, they began to lose their monopoly in Western Europe, England, and the U.S. Other companies were able to get opium, then turn into heroin out. It was in hundreds of different products at drugstores. Millions of Americans and Europeans were on it. It was called laudanum. When you hear the term snake oil, the main ingredients were cocaine and opium, sometimes both. And so they actually lobbied through the U.S. government, through the school boards and others, to ban narcotics in the U.S., not because they wanted to stop drugs, but because they had a monopoly that was being broken. A great example of this is the diamond monopoly, and this is mainstream news. Even the New Yorker magazine, Seymour Hersh, has written on this. The De Beers group, owned by the Oppenheimers, they had a world diamond monopoly of about 95%. Until about 12 years ago, and then on the west coast of Africa, little tribes would dig into the ground, dig up some diamonds, sell them. That small amount of diamonds getting out there drove down the price of diamonds around 60%. There was a panic, so we saw French and British troops invade the Gold Coast. It was in the mainstream news. They massacred all these villages. And then De Beers just bragged that, oh, we're just, and this was in the news. They bragged, we're maintaining this, and they called them conflict diamonds. Oh, those are terrorist diamonds. So it's the same thing with the drug war. They made it illegal so that they could then corrupt the police, control it, have a black market, and by making it illegal, they made hundreds of times the profits they had made when it was legal. So criminalizing narcotics was a response to losing their monopoly. And I just want to add one other thing here. George, I appreciate your courage, and you know I always say this, but I say it because it's important and needs to be said. No one else is doing what you're doing in a forum this big. I mean, O'Reilly's got 3 million viewers a night. You've got over 16 million a night. And,
well, not quite a night, but if you add them up for the week, we would.
Well, even yeah, but that's just your stations that buy the book. I've looked at it. I mean, you're downplaying yourself. My point is, you're many times bigger than the biggest news shows, okay, on TV. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, that's just a fact.
Yes.
You're here doing something no one else is doing. You have really shifted the paradigm, and the men you've got on with you are doing that as well. And so it's so important while we have this opportunity that we tell the listeners, if they go to coasttocoastam.com, they can link through to prisonplanet.com, infowars.com, where we have the photos taken by other journalists, by Estalon, the articles he's written, the work Jim's done, so much of it is posted there. We have the video, we have the photos, more of it going up every day. I mean, George, you bring up, well, they say they're trying to save the Earth. That's their excuse. That's their emotional crutch to carry out all of this evil. Once a nation industrializes, you get negative population growth. The globalists are doing the opposite. They're trying to keep the third world from industrializing so these people will die. These are in official globalist documents. So when we talk about the Bilderberg Group, folks, these are pure evil. They are in control and in power because they are ruthless. For some reason in human civilization, only the most evil throughout history get into control. Look again at history. So that's the point I've been trying to
all
make
right.
here.
Let me say one thing about the Taliban and then ask you all, if you can comment, especially you, Alex, and you, Daniel, on the Ottawa conference to find out what the agenda was. What are some of the things they talk about? But with the Taliban, how ironic is it that, first of all, most of them were the Mujahideen that we supported when we needed to get the Soviets out of Afghanistan, and then at the same time, they were horrible for human rights. We know what they did to women. They blasted away at other religious artifacts and shrines, yet they did try to control the opium. Why the difference, Jim Mars, with the Taliban? I mean, how could they, you know, be trying to stop their own drug flow on one hand, which was a good thing, and be so bad on the other?
Well, but it's simply because they were fervent and devout Muslims, and they, you know, attacking other religious icons, that was okay, and went putting down women, that was okay. But they actually probably decided that drugs are a bad thing, and they set about destroying the poppy fields.
I see. And when you said that was okay, you mean that's what they were thinking, not you.
Yeah, okay. That was their thinking.
And to be
so,
clear,
you know, religious zealots, as they undoubtedly were, at least they were actually making a real difference in the world drug trade. That's why something had to be done. You could see the same thing happen with Manuel Noriega. You know, he was deeply involved in the drug trade. I've spoken to a CIA pilot who said he was demanding $300,000 landing fee.
Right.
And then his own National Guard would come out and load the cocaine. And so he was just, again, cutting into this centuries-old flow of drugs by these top echelon powerful people, and so we had to invade Panama, kill 8,000 Panamanians, and get him out of there. And the next year, according to official mainstream media, the drugs were, you know, at 2 and 3 times higher, just like has happened in Afghanistan.
Well, and he's also been put away in jail where no one, not even I, can get to him because
you can't get to him and talk to him. And during his so-called trial, the judge forbade the defense to bring up anything that involved the U.S. government.
He knows too much about that BCCI bank scandal.
Exactly.
Wow, George, you hit the nail on the head there. And by the way, another facet to the drug trade, they bring in the crisis, just like prohibition corrupted police, increased alcoholism. It's the same thing here. The very same global cartels that we know ship in the majority of the drugs and launder the money, the proceeds, they then are the majority owners. I've tracked this. Of the big three private prison industries. So when your stupid 16-year-old folks uses drugs, gets caught by the police, gets 5 years in prison, first time they're caught with cocaine, they then put them in a prison that is owned by the drug cartels, and your son or daughter is going to work in the prison factory for 20 cents an hour, then displacing other American workers. So the globalists ship the drugs in. When you use them, they put you in their private prison. You work for 20 cents an hour in a factory for goods they then sell.
Okay, now, so back to Ottawa now in Canada, Alex, where you were there and you were there also, Daniel. So this group is there. They meet. They have an agenda. I mean, what do? They say, look, there's 6.5 billion humans on this planet. We want 500. Let's figure out a way to exterminate them. Let's create a bird flu. Let's do something. I mean, do they actually say things like this in these meetings?
Well, we know that top members, top strategists of the group, put out public, now declassified documents, Henry Kissinger, Prince Bernhard, Prince Philip. We know that through their foundations they do this, they write this, they say this. But we know that they embraced, back in the 70s, the Club of Rome's assessment, which is now public. You can read it on their own website, where they say we've got to reduce the world population by 80 to 85%. So, of course, I cover that in my film, The Order of Death. This is the ultimate excuse for tyranny. And so I say, if human life's so bad, it's what I told Dr. Pianca, the UT professor, saying 90% need to die, they need to go ahead and line up first. Daniel?
Hello?
Yeah, Daniel, so what do they talk about? What's the agenda there?
I'd like to give you an example. For example, first, from one of the past conferences, then I'll explain. It'll help you to understand how the whole thing works.
All right.
And then I'll give you some of the agenda items. As a matter of fact, now we have the minutes of the entire conference, and we know exactly what these people talked about and who said what to whom. Because, again, I have several members who are Bilderbergers who have been passing very valuable information over the last few years, as well as Secret Service people who have been doing the same. Again, going back to the Kosovo War, which was carefully laid out and decided prior to the signing of the 1995 Dayton Agreement. I knew that in 1995, beginning 1996, all the war officially began in 1999. Now, NATO had entered the marriage of convenience with the mafia, and the freedom fighters, the Kosovo Liberation Organization, were put in place. The narcotics trade enabled Washington and Germany to finance the Kosovo conflict with the ultimate objective of destabilizing the Belgrade government and recolonizing the Balkans. Now, it served another purpose. The cash flow and the profits from the smuggling of the drugs are directed through the U.S. banks and stocks back into the Wall Street coffers. That's what the CIA does.
Daniel, that this Republican Senate report of 99 confirmed that our government gave $45 million to Al-Qaeda through Iran to attack the Serbs, and when the Serbs fought back with real terrorist attacks every day, then they were called terrorists and we invaded. So what Daniel said is a Senate report. Go ahead, Daniel.
And the final objective of all of that, which is basically diverting huge quantities of cash, is twofold. First of all, to weaken Russia and to destabilize the entire region from the Balkans, passing through Turkey, Eastern Europe, and Russia. And third, destabilization in the region will balkanize Russia. Fourth, the increasing U.S. military and economic presence, which is, of course, Bilderberger controlled, will consolidate New World Order's control over the last remaining oil and gas reserves in the region. Finally, and again, this is exactly what these people are talking about. They're not talking about killing and genocide. They're talking about discussing through consensus. And this final objective will result in a further drain on Russian influence in the region and greatly increase global instability.
And let me just add, Iraq is the same thing. We have Israeli and U.S. government documents in the early 80s saying a strategy of balkanization, breaking it up. They want the Iraq war to fail. That's why every general that tries to fix things is fired. We have the official Pentagon plans, P2OG and others. Do the defense contractors make more money and get to build bases and stay there if they fail? No. I mean, if they succeed.
As long as it's prolonged, they make a fortune.
Yes, as long as it's prolonged. Exactly. As long
and
as it's prolonged.
Let's not forget that all of this is costing American blood.
Exactly.
We've almost lost 3,000 people just in Iraq. They don't even talk about Afghanistan. And, of course, we lost a lot of American soldiers in the Kosovo conflict.
Well, you're right, but I was kind of babbling there because I was trying to put it all in perspective. Bottom line, the official U.S. government plan says we want civil war, we want to fail, we want it to be a quagmire, we have an excuse to stay, and then that destabilizes the entire region. This is the official plan. I mean, sure, it's great to go kick Saddam out if you really get out of there and give him sovereignty. They don't want sovereignty. That was never the plan. That's why they've caught. That's why they've caught British SAS soldiers. This is the time.
Let me ask you something. When President Bush asked for that first $83-85 billion years ago for Iraq, what do you think would have happened had he said at that point, no, folks, we're going to need at least $330 billion, which is what they've spent to date.
It wouldn't have happened.
Never would have gotten the money.
They're saying in 10 years it's going to cost over $1 trillion. And again, they are, everything they're doing by design, our troops are now realizing this, is meant to fail. By failing, they win. It's the same thing with Katrina. People say FEMA screwed up. No, they didn't. When they, quote, screw up, now they're going to get double the funding. Oh, see, we screwed up. We need more funding. We need more control. We need more powers. Oh, we're screwing up in Iraq. We can't leave. There's a civil war. Iran's causing it. We've got to invade
Iran.
So
you believe this group, the Bilderberg Group, just loves this chaos?
Of course. Their own documents.
Of course. And by the way, guys, I think you'd agree with me. If they were simply bumbling incompetence, then the law of averages would state that occasionally they'd do something in our favor. But it never happens that
no,
way, does it?
It doesn't. They're quite brilliant, Jim.
Exactly. They know exactly what they're doing. They're exercising plans laid down hundreds of years ago for the subjugation of the planet.
Daniel, while we still have you this hour, I'm going to keep Alex and Jim next hour for phone calls. Give us kind of your overall perspective then on this entire episode. You know, you've looked at them for a number of years, the Bilderberg Club. How dangerous is this group, Daniel?
Well, I think they're extremely dangerous, and extremely dangerous because of our ignorance, because of the booktube, because of the unnecessary diversions. If people just took the time to understand what these people are up to. One of the things I've noticed through all my conferences, people always said, look, we've always known that, you know, we're lied to, that the government, they cheat us, they manipulate us, but we have never been able to figure out who does what to whom. And one of the things that my book has been able to do is explain to people, and that's what I do in conferences, who does what to whom, how they manipulate us, because for the longest time we've been told that 2 plus 2 is 37, and it's not 37, it's 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's very, very easy. Once you understand how the whole thing is put together, you understand why for 125 people it is so easy to control 6 billion, why some people know more, why others know less, and how the whole thing works on the principle of reaching consensus, and how, instead of formal resolutions, and how they push these agendas. And I just said again, the whole thing in Kosovo, which was planned way in advance. I mean, these people don't plan a week or 2 weeks in advance. They plan generations ahead, and which is one of the reasons they're so successful, because they have one goal in mind, that is one world government, one world order, one currency, one religion, one region of Earth. They don't have independent countries, because these people don't like independent nations. They like regions on Earth.
And how close are they to having this accomplished?
Well, if you actually have a look of what they've been able to accomplish over the last decade, in Europe, you had individual
it's
nations.
It's been dramatic.
I'm sorry?
In Europe, it's been dramatic what they've been able to
well,
do.
Well, Europe is a microcosm, but then again, in the United States, you've had this for almost two decades. But in Europe, about 10 years ago, you had individual nations, you had individual currencies, and you had constitutions. Now what you have is one country, you have one currency. The European Constitution supersedes national constitutions, and under the Title 51 of the European Constitution, they can take away your human rights anytime they want to, if the interests of the Union are at stake, and the right can be suspended. And that's one of the things that people do not understand. For example, Alex, in the very beginning of the program, you mentioned something about the North American Union and the subsequent erosion of human rights. In Europe, what happens is that people vote for their favorite parliamentarian, thinking that these people represent their interests. Unfortunately, it does not work that way. And that's one of the things I try to explain to them in conferences. If I can have 30 seconds just to explain.
How about 20 seconds?
Perfect. How it works in Europe. The European Parliament is the only elected institution in the European Union. It is nothing more than an assembly with absolutely no legal powers to initiate legislation. And the debate is non-existent. The European Parliament has no control over monies, nor can it impose taxes. The money supply is the domain of the European Central Bank, which is run by the synarchists. Again, going back to the synarchists. And the final objective of these people is one world government controlled by the bankers. So when we elect people to protect our interests, we're not doing anything at all, because the people we elect are just an assembly. They're just a debating society. They have absolutely no rights. And we've given up our rights. And now, as a European, I have absolutely nothing to protect me from the tyranny of one.
Well, we just have to be aware. Daniel, thank you. Jim Mars, Alex Jones, are sticking around for your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.